from across the Volunteer State, the countdown to kickoff with your exclusive scouting report. Welcome to the Coach's Meeting. Coach to Coach.
The Vols back from the bye week, set to face off with Kentucky. A bit of a different approach from the coaching staff, Doug Matthews, on this bye week.
A little bit different. Off weeks, and most teams do this, but Coach Heupel, certainly, he has 3 days of practice. Certainly, what's key number one in the middle of a football season, certainly in a second open date like Tennessee has this week, you want to get healthy. I think, though, that they believe, Coach Heupel believes that maybe they didn't hit quite enough or didn't get physical quite enough that off week. That's what they did a little bit more in this week. Now, when I talk about getting a little bit more physical, you're not going to go out there and scrimmage or anything like that. But just to stay sharp, get healthy, yes, but don't make the getting healthy the number one thing that you want to get done. What you want to get done in an open week is get better at the fundamental things that you are not doing well at.
Well, and plus now you've got a body of work that you know exactly where you need to work. I've never dealt with two open dates in a season in my coaching career, but I do know that affords you a chance now, especially as deep as you've gotten into this season. Now you're able to concentrate on things that you're going to have to perfect, especially going into a stretch runs of SEC games now. That's what you're looking at. So I can see why they would handle it differently with a second chance at it.
Now, my coaches are going to cringe the moment I ask this question, but the Vol fandom sees two teams that Tennessee is better than. They see them at home. Dave, how do you tune out the Georgia noise?
Well, that can't even be a thought for the coaches, and you can't even that can't even enter into it. And tuning it out, Larry, as you say, is very important. The coaches and players, the immediate task at hand is Kentucky, and this is a head coach that is an experienced head coach. He's been a head coach for a while, and he is too experienced to let that creep in. This week matters, nothing else at all, and I know that is what is permeating all of their meetings. That's permeating all the times that they're together. The rest of the stuff doesn't. You don't take care of business against Kentucky, the rest of it really doesn't matter. This is what's important. He won't let that creep in. I can promise you that.
Well, it's all about getting to 4-1 in conference play. I'm sure at some point in the meetings last week, probably got it all over last week, was, hey, where are we right now? We put ourselves, you all have put yourselves in position to compete for a conference championship. We got the month of November to get that done. And I also think he'll lead strong. This is really where those 12 or so senior players that are playing a lot, that have been around, that know how to handle things, this is when they can really help you, particularly with those younger players that are there. Big thing is that we simply are not going to lose. Whatever it takes to win, offense, defense, kicking, whatever it takes to win, we have to get to 4-1, and that means beating Kentucky.
Does it help, Doug, that you shouldn't have much of a sense of overconfidence, especially offensively, as this month begins?
Well, I think this is really going to help Nico. That second half success, 24 points. You know, the most Tennessee has scored in a conference game was 25 points. They scored 24 in that second half, and he really played really, really well, very decisive. And I think that they will build on how and why were we successful. Well, we were successful, going to be able to run the football, but it simply got down to how well the quarterback played. He played exceptionally well in the second half. I think that'll be a building momentum for this young man, because nothing breeds success like success, and he certainly had success against – well, one of the very best teams in the country a couple of weeks ago.
Well, Coach, the other thing that's important is the players realize that too. The players realize where they have not been performing, you know, at on any level, especially on any phase of the game. The players watch film. They realize that. They know that. So they're very aware of it, and they understand the gravity of the moment too, because now they have worked themselves, to your point, Coach, they've worked themselves into a position that if everybody zeroes in and does the job that they need to do, and offensively, they've heard it from their coaches, but more importantly, they've talked among themselves, we've got to start picking it, because this defense has carried this football team this year. This up until last week, this defense, and they did it last week too. So you need the players. They know and they talk about it. They're very aware of it. So you've got to expect that this is going to be, you are going to get both from the coaches and the players zeroed and dialed in on the details of this offense, because it's really evident that if you can get that clicking a little bit, you've got a really good thing going.
Kentucky comes to Neyland Stadium having lost three straight. Quarterback play problematic, offensive line unsettled, running game not up to what we've seen the past several years.
Pull the curtain back a little bit on Mark Stoops. Done a nice job there, but he's had seven different offensive coordinators, five since 2020, and only two have lasted longer than two seasons. Quarterback development has been an issue, and it is now still, along with some other things, but quarterback development, that's always going to be the focal point for your team.
I think that's probably where the problem is, or certainly where the fix needs to be. Brock Vandergrift, he's under 60% passer and under 60% in the way teams throw the football day, with so many passes behind the line of scrimmage. That is really not very good. He's a pocket passer. He's not really a run threat. So that means that defenses can load up on that inside running game. And also in the passing game on that. But he is capable. He has played well. The one thing that stands out, they're 1-5 in SEC play. But that one win was at Ole Miss, which is a really good football team. So those will be some of the talking points that Coach Heupel will put this team. Should we beat this team? Yes.
Their offensive line issues, when you start digging back and watching tape, it started with the South Carolina game. That injuries to Cortland Ford, Gerald Mincy, Jager Barton in that game, that started the inconsistency. And then here's what followed: penalties, false starts, holding, illegal formations, you know, that they're calling very closely now about, you know, not enough people on the line of scrimmage. And they've all been issues for this offensive line since that South Carolina game.
You know, there's an old saying in coaching that it doesn't catch up with you until it catches up with you.
Right.
And that's what happened these last couple of games. Auburn game, they only had 70 yards rushing in that game and only 224 yards. Now, this is against an Auburn team. This is a game at home against an Auburn team that you know, is really not all that stout. So they have some problems offensively they got to get fixed. The question is, during the season, are you able to fix those? And they're coming into Knoxville against one of the better defenses in the country.
By the way, Mincy will not play against the Volunteers on Saturday. Kentucky has failed to top 20 points in an SEC game so far. Defense has also struggled each of the last 2 weeks. Doug, Auburn averaged 9-plus yards per carry in the win Saturday.
Statistically, 326 net rush yards. They actually had 366. Somehow they lost 40 in their own sacks. But 50 attempts on this. This was a big day. 6.6 per play. And they had a running back that averaged almost, had 260-some yards. Mackey averaged almost 12 yards per carry. Now, 12 yards per pass attempt is good. But 12 yards for rushing attempts, that's just poor defense anyway you draw it up.
Yeah, well, Coach Matthews, let's draw back and take even a bigger picture. Nationally, they're 21st in the country. 310 yards per game, 17 touchdowns, but teams are averaging 5.7 yards per play against them. In the Southeastern Conference, Texas, Tennessee, Ole Miss, South Carolina, Mizzou, Georgia, they're all ahead of this defense, statistic-wise and play-wise. The only teams that are behind them defensively, statistically, are Auburn, OU, Alabama, surprisingly, Vandy, Arkansas, LSU. They're just not dominating anything, really. And they've got some good players on defense. We'll talk about those specifically later. But as a group, they're not performing as like we're used to, Coach, seeing a Mark Stoops defense perform.
More on the Wildcats, more on Saturday night's matchup at Neyland Stadium as we continue with this edition of Coach to Coach. As we begin a new SEC week, look who's atop the conference, Texas A&M. One of the biggest reasons, Dave McGinnis, a physical, sound approach that has been missing over the previous several years in the previous regime.
When Elko was hired here, we thought that there would be more substance football-wise than fluff. They're now physical. They're accountable. the team unity looks much better. They are playing off of one another very, very well. But this football team, when you watch them play, Coach, has a physical mindset throughout the squad. That wasn't there before. They had the athletes. The mindset wasn't the same.
They lost their first game of the year, Notre Dame, neutral site. Again, this is Coach Elko's first game. First game, sometimes you have to kind of work through some things, but they've won seven straight. And, Mac, they've done it just the way what you're talking about. They're in the top two in the conference, running the ball and stopping the run. Tennessee's in the top two in both those also. So that's what does that tell you? That means they're physical up front at both lines of scrimmage. They're 5-0. They only have three conference games remaining right now, and they're the only undefeated team in conference play. Listen, they're sitting in the catbird seat. They have at South Carolina. South Carolina's 2-3 in the South Asian Conference. They're at Auburn. Auburn's 1-4, and then they got Texas at home. With one loss, they will be in the SEC championship game. And this is the surprise team, somewhat of a surprise team, simply because of the coaching change. They've had great recruiting classes. One thing to look for, though, it looks like they've gone in this last week they certainly did, to a quarterback change in Marcel Reed. He's a young man from right here in Nashville, Tennessee, played at NBA. He only threw two passes in that game. We just alluded to how many yards they rushed for. No need to throw the football. That's the one question mark right now, and they are going to be playing on the road.
This is Coast to Coach with former University of Tennessee defensive coordinator Doug Matthews and former NFL defensive coordinator and head coach Dave McGinnis, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
There are a lot of physical therapists in Tennessee, and you don't want to go to a therapist. You want to choose the therapist that is right for you. This is Charles Davis. I had injuries in my playing days and valued the importance of a quality rehab program. I know and trust these folks, which is why I would choose Star when in Tennessee, and you should too. Their clinicians have world-class advanced training to make them great mechanics of the human body and to get you better fast. Find a Star location near you at starpt.com.
Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, success demands five-star talent. The same is true for your heavy lifting equipment. Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy from Forklift Systems. Our team will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and let you know which equipment to trade or cut. Remember, if you're not improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on, just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details and clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips, it's going to be great.
Vols and Kentucky face off for the 120th time Saturday at Neyland Stadium. This is Coach to Coach. SEC schedule Saturday begins with Ole Miss and Arkansas. Rebels credit a halftime discussion in the win over Oklahoma for kind of changing the vibe in that game. We'll see if it extends to the matchup in Fayetteville. Vanderbilt goes to Auburn. Commodores' last win versus Auburn in the state of Alabama. It came in Montgomery back in 1948. Interesting stat. The average margin of victory in all SEC games so far this season, 13.3 points. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, if it holds, it would be, number one, 3 points fewer than last year. And in fact, it would be the smallest margin of victory since 2015. Take it a step further. A True Media Study report shows 57% of SEC games have been within one possession at some time in the fourth quarter. That is the most since 2010. So, Dave McGinnis, why are we seeing this in the SEC this season?
Well, first of all, when all of this NIL and transfer portal and collective started, the SEC as a group were all in. They were all in. There is strong recruiting throughout all of these schools. I mentioned NIL and collectives and the transfer portal. Everybody bought in the Southeastern Conference. They said, if this is the way it's going to be, then we're going to be the best at it. The best players want to play in the top conference. And right now, that is the SEC from top to bottom. But to me, the one specific reason is, as a group, they all bought in to the new way of doing business.
A couple of things. One thing you learn quickly when you get to coaching and or playing in this conference is you quickly realize that you got to count on most, if not every, conference game you're going to play going into the fourth quarter because teams are so good. But I think two things in particular – Larry, that really points us up. One is Oklahoma, Texas coming into the league. They brought two really good defenses in the league and two really good football teams. Texas, certainly. Oklahoma, offensively, not so much. But the other thing is, Mac just mentioned, it's a transfer portal. You have a chance now. All of these teams now, you have an opportunity to go out and fix whatever problems you have through the transfer portal. And that's why defenses have got better, because they're able to bring in transfer portal players, again, to fill those holes that they don't have. So conference-wise, Texas and Oklahoma coming in, two strong teams, and this year in particular, Oklahoma really good on defense. And then the transfer portal is the big key there, I think.
Well, and plus, I mean, Coach, the Southeastern Conference, you're going to have everything available to you. And it's personnel departments now in collegiate football at the highest level. And they've done a good job of evaluating transfer portal players that can be immediate help. That can flip your team. That flips your team so fast now, you're not waiting to, and as you said, have the majority of your players soak. You've got guys that have played collegiate football and have matured since they were recruited at other places to come in and play. It's a huge, huge advantage, especially when you've got all of the assets that you need and everything pointed towards getting better talent.
Half your games, of course, are on the road, four at home, four on the road, and almost every single conference game that's played at home, or when you go in to play somebody on the road at their home, you're playing in front of a big crowd, a loud crowd, a boisterous crowd, and I think that plays a part in it too.
So we've kind of settled then into a new normal. NIL, transfer portal, realignment is complete for now. But there's still that feeling there that the biggest change in college football is still to come. Doug Matthews, do you believe that in the next 20 years we will see a breakaway of several dozen college football teams?
There's absolutely nothing that I see that can keep that from happening. I don't think it'll be 20 years. I think it'll be more like 10 years, maybe a little bit less than that. Listen, it's already being discussed behind closed doors or maybe on telephone, cell phone somewhere. But the big thing is getting this house lawsuit settlement fixed, which looks like it's going to happen next year. That's the one about the name, image, likeness. The NCAA and the power conferences, they have the transfer portal fixed. They are getting name, image, likeness fixed. The next step is going to be to separate the teams that can be proficient and be able to play in the name, image, likeness era and also the transfer portal era. But again, I think it'll happen in the next 10 years, maybe even quicker than that.
So what's going to lead us to that? What's going to be the ultimate force that makes that change?
Well, there's two forces that are making this. The Big Ten and the Southeastern Conference. Those are 34 Power Four conference teams. We're probably looking, when it's all said and done, when we move into whatever this new segment or era is going to be called with the top, 50 or 60 teams. Well, 34 of them, well over half of them, are going to come from those two conferences. Those two conference commissioners are working with each other. They're going to start scheduling each other in 2026, playing regular season games. That's the big thing. And listen, they are the big dogs. But the big thing is the financial part of it. That's where all the money is. All of the money is in those 32 teams in those two conferences. I'm talking about media rights money. It dwarfs and swamps any other conference as far as money. And when it gets down to it, you know, football and is kind of like life. You know, if the more money, money ain't everything, but it's sure better, heck of a lot better than what's in second place.
Yeah, Coach, I couldn't agree more. The ramifications of this are going to be just that. You're going to have a group that, first of all, is going to have the financial wherewithal to buy into this and to compete with this. And then you're also going to have, once they get it, as you said, formed up as to where now they have rules. It's going to be close to getting collective bargaining next, going with the NIL, going with the collectives. All of this stuff, the ramifications are, you're probably going to have, I would say, between 50 and 55 teams that are going to buy in and be all in on this, and the others will not, and it's going to be two separate different ways to do business in collegiate football.
Well, let's just look at this. This is a big indicator to me. The divide between the haves and the have-nots money-wise, it's only going to grow. I looked at this week's schedule. This week's schedule, NCAA football is playing games on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You know how many Power 5 teams are playing any other day than Saturday? Zero. So the smaller programs now know that the only way they're going to get any air, any oxygen, is to play. They have to play on Tuesday nights now. And we've had those several weeks during the schedule. Why? Because that's the only time that the major TV markets, ESPN, is going to put you on. So that gives you a little indication of where those power teams are and where the non-power teams are. Big, big difference in playing, obviously, on a Tuesday and on a Saturday.
Yeah, and as you say, the Power Four schools, they're getting all the prime time now because this is what the networks want to show, and it's clearly paying off because the networks would not be doing this if viewership wasn't off the charts for these Power Four schools. And so you're going to see even more of that, and as Coach has just said here, that's going to continue.
All right, so it's 50 to 55 schools. Let's just start with that number. Does the entire SEC go? Does the entire Big Ten go, Doug? Or is it partial members of those conferences and then a couple of more teams from the ACC and the Big 12?
Well, it's certainly going to be everybody for those conferences. Now, could some opt out? You know, maybe a private school, maybe. But the significance of when that time comes is that all those teams, Southeastern Conference teams, when we get to that point, they're going to be making over $105 million every year coming in from the league. They're going to have to make those decisions on that. There's still going to be, you know, some teams that probably aren't competing at the championship level, but I think the money part of it is such a big factor that they will certainly stay there. Again, we're looking at somewhere between, let's say 55 is probably a good number to work around. Could be a few more, could be a few less. 34 of those are in those two conferences, and you just look around, you know that the Clemsons, the ACC is going to have several teams in there, the Big 12 probably a couple. But other than that, you know, that's going to be that league. Programs are going to have to decide, and it all gets down to money. Athletic program, universities are going to have to decide, can we compete in this power conference? And remember, this is only a power conference for football. It doesn't affect the other sports. It's just football. So can we compete in football financially and otherwise in this new power conference? That'll be a decision that had to be made. But Larry, I can assure you of this. These athletic directors and presidents know that this is coming. So they're talking about this, you know, to their staff in their staff rooms right now, because they're going to have to make that decision next 7, 8, 10 years.
Oh, absolutely, Coach. And here's the thing. The decision is going to be up to the people in the specific instances that are putting up the money. I mean, that's just what it is. And that's only going to increase. If those people decide that they're all in, they will be all in. And there may be some that choose not to participate. I don't see anybody in those two conferences not participating. Look what's happening just this year on the very surface of Vanderbilt and Indiana. Look at what's happening now, being able to embrace the portal and the NIL and getting involved in that. All of a sudden, you have seen football programs at these two places elevate quickly. In those two conferences, I don't think anybody's going to opt out.
Yeah, I think, though, about some school. I think about the school that I went to, a school that has had a troubled history in football, and that's North Carolina. And do you look at it and say, you know what, we're a basketball school. That's what we're going to be. We're going to play, you know, Division I football, but we're not going to put the money up. Do you think people would be okay with those kinds of decisions being made at a school like a North Carolina, like some others in that realm?
Well, that's a great example, Larry, and that is where the question is going to have to come to those individual schools. Vanderbilt, my alma mater, I think, would be one. And here's where it's going to be on that. It's not so much about the football part of it, but it's the part about this. You know, we have this is our pot for name, image, likeness, all right? Do we want to spend the majority of that on football that we're just pretty good in, or maybe a little below average, or maybe not very good? Or do we want to put it into our basketball program? You know, you got a lot. You can pay 10 basketball players a heck of a lot when you compare to 50 football players, that type of thing. And I think there's other things, other sports, baseball, things like that. I'll just use Vanderbilt as an example because, again, that's the university that I graduated from. I think they're going to have to take a really strong look at that. Now, I believe that they will stay in right now. But when you get to looking, it's not so much the media rights money. It's that transfer. It's that name, image, likeness. You know, how much can we raise, and do we want to use this pot of money for our basketball team that we know can be good, for our baseball team, which is good, for our women's basketball team? Those are going to be the questions. But it eventually is going to get down to how much money we can utilize in name, image, likeness.
Here's the thing about it. You got to raise the money every year. Every year.
Well, absolutely you do. And that's why I said it's going to come down to how much money you want to allocate, and it's going to come down to the collectives. It really is, because you're asking people now to donate over and above what they would normally donate, you know, to their university, to these collectives, to keep it generating. So that's going to come down to how much money people want to put into it. And that's the bottom line.
Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Coach to Coach continues inside the coach's meeting room for real analysis.
Bucks, cash, bread, coin, dough, bank, loot, cheddar, whatever you call it, the cash instant games from the Tennessee Lottery have lots of it. Four great games absolutely loaded to the brim with top prizes from $50 to $1,000. Now that's a whole lot of cabbage. Moolah, cheese, dinero, Benjamins. Well, you get the idea. Only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs, and at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like Black Angus burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit DoubleDogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs, set, stay, eat.
You know, starting to save for your future doesn't have to be difficult. Let Wilson Bank and Trust help tone up your financial goals this year. Our certificates of deposits or CDs can help your money work harder with our competitive rates, earning you more than ever before. WBT checking options allow you to earn rewards you can really use, like a high interest rate or cash back on check card purchases when you meet some e-banking qualifications. Visit your closest Wilson Bank and Trust office or online at wilsonbank.com to get started today. Member FDIC.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
Week 10 of the SEC season includes Florida and Georgia in Jacksonville. This is Coach to Coach. The vitriol has cooled, at least publicly, for now, for Florida coach Billy Napier. Doug Matthews, where do you think he stands entering November?
Let me tell you what is really interesting that really nobody is talking about. This is going to affect not only Florida, but every other team or university or athletic department who is thinking about making a change. There's a new NCAA calendar out this year, And just think about this. December 4th, which is the Wednesday before the championship games. December 7th is the championship weekend. December 9th is when the transfer portal opens. So if you're going to make a change, just think about the calendar there. If you wait till the end of the season, their early signing period has already happened, and you only have 5 days before the transfer portal player. If you let a coach go then, you can bet that there's going to be a big number. Just look what happened at Alabama last year when Nick Saban retired. You know, you're going to have a bunch of them in there. That's going to be the one of the biggest factors. But here's Billy Napier's problem right now. Hadn't been there all that long. You can make a lot of reasons for him to stay. He has five rivals that he has to play. He's already lost to Miami 41-17. He's lost to Tennessee 23-17. He plays Georgia this week. Likely will lose. And then he's got LSU and Florida State still left. Those are the five teams that Florida fans expect you to compete with. He is 0 for 2 right now, and I'd say his chances of going 1 for 4 are really good. So that's going to play a factor into it too. But I think the biggest decision, again, Larry, we're going to see this around. We've already seen some of the smaller schools, East Carolina, a few others. If you're going to let a coach go, you're almost forced to do it now before that season's over. One final thing on that early signing period. Here's the other thing, too. Well, you say, well, you know, Doug, you know, but he's already signed that freshman class. Well, that's true. But you know what everyone in Hampton could do? They can transfer immediately 5 days later if they want to, and they hadn't even been on campus yet.
Well, and look, Coach, here's the thing. Let's look at this. Gators are sitting at four and three right now, right? Three of those losses are coming to teams that accumulated 21-2 on the year. If they finish 6-6, lose to Georgia and Texas, you've already talked about that, split LSU and Ole Miss, then beat Florida State, do they pull the plug? That would make him 6-6. Since Urban Meyer left Florida, the tenure has been 44 games, basically. Napier's at 32. They've got to decide, where are they going to spend their money? Are they going to spend the money buying him out? Are they going to spend the money on that collective and getting those players that you talked about? That's going to be the issue.
Also Saturday, 2:30 start for Oklahoma and Maine, 3:15 kickoff for Mississippi State and UMass. Balls in Kentucky play Saturday night. Dave McGinnis, this is a Kentucky receiver corps that has some talent.
Yeah, their leading receiver is Dane Key, number 6. He's a junior, 6'3", 210, 39 catches, 587 yards, 15.1 average. So the dude can make some explosives. Long of 42, 2 touchdowns. And then Baron Brown, number 7. 23 catches, 278 yards, over a 12-yard average, has a long of a 63, 3 touchdowns, and he's a 6'1", 182-pound junior. So they've got some guys they can spin it to if, Coach, they can protect the quarterback and the quarterback can dial in.
Well, Baron Brown is a local youngster,
yes,
National Pearl Cone. He was a state champion 100 meters. And also, he is their kickoff and return guy. He has speed and deep. He's the deep threat you got to worry about. But here's the thing: if you look statistically, they played 4 Southeastern Conference games. In those 4 Southeastern Conference games, they are 15th out of 16 teams in pass offense. They are 10th out of 16 in rush offense, and most importantly, 16 teams in the Southeastern Conference scoring offense, they're number 16. That's their problem. I don't care how good your wide receivers are. If you're 15th out of 16th throwing the football, you got some problems somewhere.
And part of those offensive woes, Doug, they are struggling right now in the red zone.
And most of that comes from, again, from that pass offense. You know, when you get – anytime you get inside the 20-yard line, Mac and I talk about this a lot, defenses, that's where they want you. I mean, they don't want you down there because you're going to score, but that's where they want you because you only got 30 yards to throw the football at most. And the closer you get to the goal line, you don't have to worry about deep passes. That's the area where they're hurt the most. What do you need to have there? You need to have a quarterback that can help you run in the football. They do not have one of those, and they're well under 50% scoring touchdowns when they're inside the 20-yard line. Kicking some field goals, but that's not a good recipe for winning a lot of ball games in this conference.
Well, Doug, going off of what you said, let's talk about what Tennessee's done well defensively in the red zone. They're very strong, first of all, in the low red zone. which is the plus 6 yard line to the goal line, against the run. They're really hard to run against down there. Excellent run defense. But this year, now the corners they have that can play man to man, they've been very strong down there, especially on the fade routes, especially on the two step slants. All of those things now, especially in the low red zone where it really the crunch comes, they are very, very strong. But it starts with the fact that they have been consistently strong up front defensively.
Well, listen, Tennessee's defensive staff, Tim Banks looks at these stats just like we do, and more importantly, looks at tape when he's putting up game plan. They know that they're 15th out of 16 in pass offense. So just off the top of your head, what's the first thing you're going to do game plan-wise? We're going to make them beat us throwing the football, and we're going to make them beat us moving the ball down the field. Tennessee is good enough on defense, plenty good enough, that with good field position, there are not many teams, and Kentucky's one of them, and they're not going to be very successful moving down the field very often. So I'm sure that will be part of the game plan. Make Brock Vandergriff beat us in the pocket, throwing the football, and don't worry about him running. When he runs, we'll rally to the ball and get him down because he's not a running quarterback.
Let's talk about Tennessee's offense for a minute. You got a proven offensive scheme. You got playmakers who have shown that they can make plays. You've got a quarterback who is, by his youth, inconsistent. So how do you think this offensive staff is trying to maximize the potential of this offense while also minimizing the mistakes as we go into this November stretch?
Well, this is an easy equation for Coach Heupel. Our kicking game is excellent, at times outstanding. Our defense is excellent. Our run game is number two in the Southeastern Conference. What's missing? The passing game. And that's where all really the offensive problems are. They've had 8 turnovers. 6 of those have come from the quarterback position. 5 of those have been interceptions and 2 fumbles on sacks. So all of the problems offensively or for the whole football team, but certainly offensively for Tennessee, is in the passing game. Go back to an earlier conversation we had. 24-point out the second half, the last 2 quarters they were on the field, that all changed. And if Tennessee can keep that part of it going, they're going to be a tough, tough football team to beat because they don't have any other weaknesses in any other areas.
No, and concentrate on the consistency of the quarterback. And in my opinion, too, Coach, let him keep spinning it down the field. And the other thing, start incorporating him. Let him run. Let him run, because the guy is an athlete, but work on his consistency, but don't start pulling the reins back in on him. Continue to let him grow, because we've seen some growth out of this quarterback, especially the last ball game when he got hurt, came back in, and performed probably the most consistent he's performed all year. I would not pull the reins back on this quarterback at all. I'd give him his head and keep working.
Well, a couple of things that came out of the Alabama game that I know Tennessee offensively saw. One thing that Nico has always been pretty good at, I think we're going to see more of this, is him getting out of the pocket, either with bootlegs or with play action or just sprint out passes. A couple of reasons for that. Number one, their offensive tackles have had problems, no question about that. Now, you can help that by putting 2 tight ends in there, but when you put 2 tight ends in, now you limit what your passing options are on. So I think we're going to see him get more out of the pocket. He made a beautiful throw to Thornton to set up that first touchdown against Alabama. And I think he's more confident out there. Because where's his problems, where's his fumbles come from? It comes from when he's in the pocket and getting sacked. So I expect Tennessee will utilize a little bit more of that and throw the ball. I really think they're going to be throwing the ball down the field a good bit more because those plays were there. He was just unable to get the ball to them in the first half. But in the second half, he was. The growth in the deep passing game is the key for Tennessee to get to where they would like to get to at the end of this year.
Dave, as you watch the tape on Kentucky's defense, what do you see?
Deion Walker is a defensive tackle, 6'6", 345 pounds. He's number 0. You're going to have to control him on the inside. 29 tackles, 1.5 sacks. He had 7.5 sacks last year. Now, when you watch the tape, he's getting doubled a lot this year, and he's getting the offensive line has turned protections to him. But this guy at 6'6", 345, he's a force. But their linebacker, Jamon Dumas Johnson, number 2, This 6'1", 245 senior, he's got 40 tackles this year, 2.5 sacks, 1 interception. You got to get a hat on both those guys.
Well, the big guy I'd want to know where is, you mentioned J.J. Weaver. He had 5 sacks, got 4 quarterback hurries, and he comes from that open end. He's an edge rusher. Again, that's where Tennessee's had problems, that edge rusher. Big kid, senior, 6'5 kid, 250-ish, but he's got those long arms, aggressive. They'll know where he is for sure.
Get inside the huddle. Biggins, Matthews, and you. Coach to Coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
Hey there, I've been hired by the Tennessee Lottery to celebrate every time there's a
woohoo!
A winner across the state. Truthfully, it's a little more work than I expected. I had no
woo-hoo!
Idea that Tennessee Lottery players win an average of $3.6 million every day. That's
woo-hoo!
A whole lot of moolah. So play today for your chance to win
woo-hoo!
Big. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
Woo-hoo!
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs. And at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like Black Angus Burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have 2 legs or 4, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit DoubleDogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs. Sit. Stay. Eat.
Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, success demands 5-star talent. The same is true for your heavy lifting equipment. Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy from Forklift Systems. Our team will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and let you know which equipment to trade or cut. Remember, if you're not improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
Kentucky and Tennessee Saturday night, Texas A&M and South Carolina also in action. This is Coach to Coach. Aggies have won 8 of 9 in this series. Texas A&M likes to run the ball, but South Carolina has been one of the stingier teams in the league this year against the run. You know, college football has long been governed by the polls. Can you imagine a fan 50 years from now when he learns or she learns that they didn't always have a playoff in college football? The polls decided who won the championship. There's always been a lot of talk about the bias of the polls, especially in limiting those lesser-named teams' ability to make a run up the poll as the season plays out. It's also a system that rewards what you did last year. I mean, that's clear. Always had been the situation there. It's been a flaw in the polls. But, Dave, as we are entering this new era of college football, it really is almost foolish, isn't it, to base anything about this year on what you did last year?
You know, Larry, absolutely foolish is a nice word to use about that. I mean, I've got stronger words for that. And especially now, rosters change more drastically than ever with the NIL and transfer portal. Drastic changes in personnel year to year now because of the players that you can bring in. It's very unpredictable, and especially until you start conference play. Because all of these games, especially the Power Four schools play in the quote preseason, that doesn't really tell you what kind of football team they have until you get into conference play, and a lot of times until you really dig into conference play halfway through your conference schedule. So there's no way you can look at that and say this is how it's going to end up, because it's just not realistic.
Well, first off, let's make sure everybody understands this. Coaches pay absolutely no attention to polls, certainly preseason polls, but even during the week on that. I look at the AP poll in particular. It's kind of like I look at the Telegraph. at one time it was necessary. That's the way you got information around that, and that's what the polls back in the 30s and 40s and 50s were about. Nobody was on TV. You know, you didn't have any type of radio shows that really covered it, so you needed the newspapers and the writers to do that. That's no longer true. It's a relic of yesterday, and really that was prior to the now, when we have 24-hour-a-day sports streaming. You can get all the information on these teams you want. So, but what's it out there for? What does it do? It drives conversation at sports talk shows, and you kind of sit around, you know, something to complain about. You know, heck, we're 6-1, and we're only ranked 7th in the country. What are those guys thinking about? That part of it is still good. But, again, it's kind of like the Telegraph.
Okay, so it is a relic. But here's a real-life situation where it will have an impact as we play out the next 6 weeks or so. Let's take Texas, for example, who beat Michigan. We all thought that was a good win at the time. Why? Because of where Michigan was ranked. Texas also beat Oklahoma. We thought that was a good win. But as the season wears on, it's not looking like as good a win. So one of the things that happens with these polls, however, is that they put expectations there that maybe you look at Texas's resume, Doug, and as you size it up here in a couple of weeks when they start really looking at the playoffs, and you say, okay, who did Texas really beat in the course of the season?
Well, one thing to remember is, though, that none of these polls that we're talking about have anything to do with the 12-team playoff. That is the College Football Committee, playoff committee, that factors in that. And they look at what the teams you beat or lost to are doing. Let me give you an example. Texas A&M, one of the good things, not only are they undefeated in conference play, their one loss was to Notre Dame, which is a top 10 team. That is not a bad loss right now. On the other side of it, Notre Dame is sitting there now with a win over a team that most likely is going to be in the SEC championship game. But again, those polls have absolutely nothing to do. It does for fans. It does for perception. But when those athletic directors and former coaches get in that college football playoff and start in, and by the way, that comes up this coming Tuesday. That's when we're going to get the first poll out. They don't play any attention to that. They look at who you played. A great example of that last year, a lot of people didn't like it, but it's when the 12-0 and ACC champ Florida State was left out of the 4-team playoff because of the schedule that they played, and also the fact that they lost their starting quarterback.
Well, and to me, that is exactly the point I was making, is it doesn't matter until you get into the meat of your schedule, because who you beat is what they are right now. And I agree wholeheartedly with what Coach Matthews is saying. Nobody, and especially the committee's paying no attention to that. That's why they wait until now to start ranking with the committee at this week. That's why they wait.
Here's the other part of this, though, that only you guys know as coaches. And you can use Missouri, you can use Florida State, whatever example you want to. But you have the impact of transfers in terms of the athletic ability. There's also that part of team building.
I think that's going to be the big factor going forward. Transfer portal is something that's new for not only fans, but for coaches. So you still are trying to figure out exactly how that's going to work. Let me tell you what's going to become more and more and more important because of what these coaches are seeing right now. It allows you, a coach, to make up for recruiting mistakes, but you got to find proven players that can play in your system. And so much of it, how many times have you heard coaches say this? You know, if the first thing on a transfer portal player's mind is how much name, image, likeness am I going to get, probably want to steer away from him. Now, the problem is the top programs can do that. The other programs cannot on that. But the transfer portal has been so, so key. Let's just look at somebody we talk about a lot, the Tennessee secondary. The top five defensive backs that played last year for Tennessee were gone. They brought in three transfer portal players. All three of those are productive. One is the best guy they got on the field in McCoy. They have another starter who was a transfer portal player a couple of years ago. So making those key decisions, that's where the head football coach has to say, can Dave McGinnis, I know he can play talent-wise for us,
But can he fit into what we do, are doing here with our team and many other ways? And the teams that can do that the best, and let me tell you who's done it the best so far to me right now, is Vanderbilt.
Play calls. Official calls. Wrong calls. We break it all down. Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. This is Coach to Coach.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details and clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips, it's going to be great.
You know, starting to save for your future doesn't have to be difficult. Let Wilson Bank and Trust help tone up your financial goals this year. Our certificates of deposits or CDs can help your money work harder with our competitive rates, earning you more than ever before. WBT checking options allow you to earn rewards you can really use, like a high interest rate or cash back on check card purchases when you meet some e-banking qualifications. Visit your closest Wilson Bank and Trust office or online at wilsonbank.com to get started today. Member FDIC.
Bucks.
Cash. Bread. Coin. Dough. Bank. Loot. Cheddar. Whatever you call it, the cash instant games from the Tennessee Lottery have lots of it. Four great games absolutely loaded to the brim with top prizes from $50 to $1,000. Now that's a whole lot of cabbage. Moolah. Cheese. Dinero. Benjamins. Well, you get the idea. Only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
The biggest game on this week's Top 25 schedule, Penn State and Ohio State. Must wins are an overused term, but the Penn State fan base is not happy with James Franklin's performance against the Big Two of the Big Ten.
You've got everything available to you to be able to do that, and the expectations are very high. And then James Franklin, let's be honest, has not helped himself in the last few weeks with the tense exchanges, with some of his off-field things that have gone on with the media. You're never going to win that, but he's got to beat those two people. He hasn't done it yet.
Whichever coach, whichever team, but whichever head football coach loses this ball game, they're going to have heat all over him.
The winning numbers, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. The Tennessee Lottery is proud to have raised more than $7.5 billion for education in Tennessee.
The number is 2.6. Kentucky's rushing average last week against Auburn. Wildcats face a Tennessee defense Saturday that has been great against the run.
Yeah, and so this puts all the heat on the offensive line for Kentucky. If they don't win at the line of scrimmage and protect the quarterback, which has been a problem for them, this is a huge matchup advantage for the Tennessee Volunteers.
The number is 6. Brew McCoy, 6 catches, 80 yards in the Alabama win. He had a total of just 2 catches in the previous 2 games.
Feed Brew McCoy, and that's what we're going to see the rest of the season now. Getting completions down the field, and especially on those 50-50 balls that they need to start throwing more of. That's the key to this team in the next 5 games.
Coach to Coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Coach to Coach.